Thanks for joining us for the State Capitol Report on this Monday. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. Our guest is a lawmaker who wants to give people in Wisconsin the right to ask online data collectors for copies of the personal information they've got and to see whether they've sold those details to anyone else. It's part of his push to hold big tech like Google and Facebook accountable. And we want to hear from you. Are you concerned about who has your data and what they're doing with it? Do you think companies should be able to sell it without you knowing? And have you taken steps to protect the data you do have on the internet? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. State Representative Shannon Zimmerman is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 30th Assembly District of the River Falls area. Representative, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, good morning, Keely. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Certainly, you have this package of three different bills aiming to address data privacy. What inspired you that now is the time to try to change what's happening with our information online?
Yeah, very fair question. So I think part of the answer is it lies in a bit of my background and past. So my wife and I are entrepreneurs in the state of Wisconsin, and over two decades ago started a technology business. And over the years, we're able to grow that company, and in doing so, really had a front row seat into how technology is first and foremost providing an array of benefits to us, to all of us, not only in Wisconsin, but of course globally. But also recognizing some of the potential challenges that innovation and technology are presenting. And if you really reflect back and you look at kind of what's happening and the velocity and the speed in which technology is advancing, it has all the makings to transform the world in so many favorable ways, maybe eradicate certain diseases and all that sort of great stuff. But more and more, we're hearing stories of people's personal privacy being violated in all forms. So the impetus really for me in looking at this and taking a step forward is that, many times people will willingly, maybe from a commercial standpoint, be willing to volunteer their data. But nowadays, you've got people or, as I'll say, objects listening inside your homes, your vehicles, your offices. And I just think we need to start to put some boundaries around this so that we are properly protected.
One of the bills you're floating allows people to request and then receive a copy of data that a company has on them. What do you envision that including, and why would we care to have that?
So The package of bills labeled as the Wisconsin Data Privacy Act, you're correct, has three basic components. The first foundational component is it would provide the Wisconsin resident the right to say, what do you have on me? And to answer your question as to the why, well, some of the things, as I mentioned, may be more commercially influenced or align more to commercial aspects of commerce and business and so forth. So an example may be, perhaps I want to know when my local sporting goods store is going to have a sale on fishing poles or what have you. That may be commercially valuable to me. However, you may also be, in some cases, disturbed to understand that they're tracking other things on you, your geographic movements, the people that you associate with and that you surround yourself with, could be political or other types of preferences. And the aggregate of all this information in some ways can be a bit disturbing to people and almost this feeling of violation. I mean, one example I use and when describing this situation is, imagine for a moment that, this evening, your family are sitting in your living room and, in through the front door walks a stranger. They sit down. They begin to photograph you. They begin to peruse and go through your file cabinets, what have you. They're recording you. You'd call the authorities. But in reality, many of our smart devices that we have in our homes have the ability and in some cases are already doing this. So that's a big motivator for me to start to take a serious look at this.
Representative Shannon Zimmerman is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 30th Assembly District, the River Falls area. And we're talking about data security. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Let us know how you think lawmakers can help regulate who gets your data and how they're using it. Again, that number is 800-642-1234. So, Representative, what kind of information might we be able to get from these companies if your bill becomes law?
So, for example, the type of information, that's a broad question, because in Europe, for example, Europe passed what is called the GDPR, the Global Data Protection Act. And in doing so, they have essentially allowed for, among many things, much of the capability that I'm talking about here. The GDPR went much further. But once enacted, people were able to, for example, request of Google, give me my dossier. What do you have on me? And in examples out of Europe, it was interesting to find they had a lot more than your search history, because that's kind of what, you know, we all associate with Google, right? They know what we've searched on.
Sure. It's related to my smartphone and my other accounts are logged in there. And so that makes sense that would be something I would assume Google knows about me.
Absolutely. Google also knows about you because you have those apps on your smartphone, as you just explained. They know where you go. They know other people that you are with. And here again, that for some, they may not want to be tracked against a geographic map of sorts. They may not want to be have other people have the ability to know maybe whom they spend their time with or what events they attend or go to. So the breadth of data really is endless. It's anything that these devices, in theory, can track or trace on you. And I want to point out one specific thing here. There's what's called anonymous data, and then, of course, there's data that's not anonymous. In cases where many technology providers are collecting anonymous data, that is not in scope for what we're talking about here. This package of bills is primarily focused on data that we can, or that they can, concretely associate with you, for example, and that would be your right. And if you ask for that data, by the way, you have to be able to validate and verify that you are the person that you say you are. So in other words, I could not contact, if we're using Google as our example, Google to obtain the complete dossier on you.
Sure, yeah. And so that data that we're requesting, when we get into specifics, are we talking names, locations, purchases? I mean, what does your bill allow us to request?
Anything that they are collecting. So okay. by generic definition, the bill is targeted at what's called data collectors. Data collectors could be the usual suspects, the companies that you've really named here, Facebook, Google. It could also be automotive manufacturers. It could be any company that is tracking data that it can directly correlate or relate to you.
And why is tackling this on the state level the right level of government to have these regulations?
Well, if I was king for a day, we would be doing this at the federal level. And that's a really good question. frankly, I will take good if we can't get great. And that's kind of the rationale that I use when assembling this package of bills. It should be taken up at the federal level. And just to be transparent, I'm the last guy that would be advocating for bigger government or more regulation. But the stakes are too great. You know, as I've said to some people, as bad as you think it is, it's probably worse in terms of some of the examples that we were able to uncover of what I consider to be kind of violations in personal data privacy. So we've opted to take it up to the state level. And there's another argument here, Keeley, where, you know, we can say, look, sometimes the states are great incubators for what then can become, you know, a model for federal legislation.
Yeah. State Representative Shannon Zimmerman is talking with us about a package of bills on data security. We'll continue that discussion and also talk about state tax surplus dollars and how lawmakers should spend it. Are there bills you want state lawmakers to take up this session? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You're listening to the State Capitol Report here on The Morning Show. We're talking on the State Capitol Report about a set of bills in Wisconsin that would let people block tech companies from collecting their personal data. And the legislation sets penalties of up to $20 million. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and our guest is State Representative Shannon Zimmerman. And we're talking about this data privacy conversation and other things happening at the State Capitol. There's a line for you now. What do you want the representative to know about your priorities as the legislature decides what to do before the session wraps up? What would make a difference in your life? 800-642-1234. You can also go and email us at ideas@wpr.org. Representative Zimmerman, we've talked about this package of bills and you've broken it down for us. But let's talk about the fact that there's a penalty in here that tries to hold these big tech companies accountable. And I have to wonder about how realistic that might be. What about the enforcement side of this data privacy package that you've put forth?
Yeah, good question. And no doubt that upon first blush, someone could look at those penalties and say, wow, that's quite substantial. So let me just give you a bit of background in terms of kind of how and where those were derived. I mentioned earlier the European GDPR regulation, which is to some degree the equivalent, and as I mentioned, it has a bit of a broader scope than what we're presenting here in the Wisconsin Data Privacy Act. The penalties under violation there are consistent with what we've put forth, or what I've put forth here in Wisconsin. And the reason is, I think that the Europeans have done a really good job, actually, in the creation, the formation of that standard. And arguably, it has the ability to potentially kind of be part, maybe the global standard. So we're coming into alignment there with them as well. But in terms of enforcement, what would happen here is if this act is signed into law by the governor, companies, data collectors who potentially would be in violation, what would happen is reports would go to our attorney general. This is not a situation where anyone could simply file suit on their own. This requires an orchestrated act from the attorney general. For that to happen, as I'm sure you can appreciate and imagine, the AG probably doesn't take these sort of things lightly. And if we're going to take the steps of initiating some action, the situation or the speculation of a violation is substantial. So this would be reported to the attorney general. The attorney general's office would investigate. Should, in fact, it become obvious and clear that we have a malicious actor, a data collector of sorts, then the attorney general would take action at that point in time.
How would we make sure, though, that these companies, if part of your bill allows us to say, I'm a user and I want you to stop collecting my data this way, how do we make sure that those companies actually follow through?
Well, good question, right? So we want to believe that certainly that these companies obviously would operate within the boundaries of law. So that's a big assumption, but one that we have to kind of make here. I think there's a couple things. So imagine that you use Google, or let's just stay with Google for a second. Imagine you contacted Google, you executed your first right under this package, which is show me what you have. And then you said, okay, this category of information over here, please remove and delete it. And then you come back 6 months later and they're doing it again. That could be a violation. You can report that to the AG then. And as I mentioned, I don't anticipate that this is going to be a situation where the attorney general is acting in a reactionary manner. If there appears to be a trend here or a company that is clearly not aligning to this, then they would take action. But in terms of other than probably that example, any other examples would require probably some form of legal authorization to summon or request records from these data collectors if we're intending to validate that, in fact, they are complying with the law.
Our guest here on the State Capitol Report is State Representative Shannon Zimmerman, and we're talking about a data privacy package that he's put forth in the state legislature. And we're also going to touch on other issues that are happening, things that we're talking about as the legislative session winds down in the state capitol. And we're wondering what you think. What do you think Democrats or Republicans should do with a state tax dollar surplus? How should lawmakers vote to spend it? And maybe there are other topics that you really want to see lawmakers bring up. Now you have a line to Representative Zimmerman to talk about what those priorities are in your life. 800-642-1234 is the number you can call. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. And Representative Zimmerman, let's turn now to that state surplus in tax dollars. Late last week, Democratic Governor Tony Evers announced that he'd like to spend $250 million of unexpected money coming in on public schools. We heard from Republican leaders last week saying they're looking at a tax cut, maybe spending down some state debt. So what do you think would be a good use of that money that we have that we didn't expect we would take in?
Well, so first of all, I think we can all feel fortunate in this great state that we live in that, you know, things by and large, I mean, nothing is ever perfect, right? I mean, there's always things that we want to improve and work on. But by and large, things are pretty good. And I can't, you know, certainly speak for all areas of the state. I represent the westernmost district just across the beautiful St. Croix River from the Twin Cities. And you know, our challenge, and I use that word up here, our challenge really in this area and probably statewide is our economy is going so strong that we're struggling to fill those jobs. So we have a workforce challenge here. So, you know, number one, I think we're living in great times and you know, Wisconsin's seeing the benefit of that. There's a couple areas I think that are important here. Number one, I think from a tax credit or some form of tax relief. Look, this money is the taxpayers' money at the end of the day, and that's never lost on me. The state of Wisconsin is not a revenue generating entity or business. This is the taxpayers' money, and I have always believed that there is no better person to manage your money than you. And so certainly I would advocate in some way that we find ways to direct some of these unexpected funds back to the Wisconsin residents so they can determine how they want to spend it. I do think a couple other areas exist, though, and that could be looked at. Mental health is a category for me that I think the state of Wisconsin can and should take a closer look at. And as I'm sure you've heard, you know, the governor also asked for this. Agriculture is a category that I think both, you know, Republicans and Democrats agree that more can be done here and should be done as we look to help our family farmers.
And now we've got Roger from Cambridge who's ready to join the discussion. Hi, Roger.
Hi. Oh, my question is, or comment is, I think we should use this projected surpluses to pay down the debt of the state of Wisconsin. I've heard that it's about $1 billion that we have in debt.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Roger. Roger wants to spend the money on paying down debt. Among your legislative assignments, Representative, you sit on the powerful Joint Committee on Finance and the Assembly Committee on Finance. So you have a view of state costs and state expenses. Should we be paying down some of our debt? Is that debt healthy for Wisconsin?
Well, look, the state of Wisconsin is no different than probably how many of us manage our home budgets. And Roger's not wrong. You know, we always want to make sure that we have our financial house in order. You are correct. As a member, as a first term member on the Joint Finance Committee, it is a wonderful look at state finances. So I do think that as we contemplate the different ways that that we can be utilizing these resources, pay down of debt is probably a pretty good way to also be taking care of some of this, because we don't know what the future holds. And you know, some would have said that this roaring economy that we have would have or should have corrected it a little bit by now. That's very typical that would happen. And so, you know, we have a wonderful rainy day fund, and some of these monies by state constitution have to go there. But a pay down of some of the debt in addition to some taxpayer relief probably is a good combination for how we may utilize the surplus.
And Representative, we're running out of time with you, but I have to mention Governor Evers has signed a number of bills that you've been involved with into law. But we've heard a lot about Republican and Democratic clash. What's your take on the partisan situation between members in the Capitol? Do you see the ability to work across the political aisle?
100%. I Keely, sometimes I think to myself that it's a bit of theater for social media and maybe to get people ginned up a little bit here. We absolutely have the ability to work together on multiple bills. In fact, all my bills that the governor was good enough to sign, each one of them were supported in a bipartisan way. So I do believe that there's more of that goes on in Madison than maybe we would believe. And the people of Wisconsin, I think by and large, are very well represented in Madison.
Representative Zimmerman, we'll keep tabs on that bipartisanship and make sure to check in with you in the future. Thanks so much for your time today.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shannon Zimmerman is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 30th Assembly District of the River Falls area. Here with us to talk about a data privacy protection package of bills circulating in the state legislature and also discuss the state surplus that we have been talking about these last couple of weeks. Up next is news. Then Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Ed Falone joins the program to discuss his campaign. Are you an undecided voter in the Supreme Court election? How much do you care about candidates' judicial philosophies or their past legal work or who's endorsed their campaigns? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234, or you can email your question, your comments to ideas@WPR.org. The State Capitol Report continues here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. The primary vote for Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice happens next week. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we've invited all three candidates to talk with us ahead of the election. The top two vote-getters in the February 18th primary advance to the general Supreme Court election in April. Your calls are welcome today, tomorrow, and Wednesday at this time as we welcome different candidates. What questions do you have for someone who hopes to be Wisconsin's next Supreme Court justice? What do you want to say about the court's recent rulings or the way justices approach cases? 800-642-1234. There's a line for you there, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky and current Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly are in the primary. So is today's guest, Ed Falone. He's a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He's also a law professor at Marquette University in Milwaukee. Professor Falone, thank you for being here with us on the Ideas Network.
It's a pleasure, Keely.
You know, you're campaigning to unseat Justice Dan Kelly after Governor Scott Walker appointed him in 2016. Why should voters bring change to the state's high court?
Well, I think voters have been frustrated for a long time with the candidates for our state Supreme Court. They don't know much about the candidates. They seem to come from the same narrow perspective and experience. So I've been running a campaign really focused on asking the voters, what kind of justice would you like to see on the court? I bring an expertise. I'm a constitutional law professor, experienced criminal defense lawyer. But most importantly, I'm someone who spent over 25 years leading nonprofit organizations that help working families and our immigrants find affordable lawyers so they can get real fair justice in the courts. So I'm just talking to everyone about bringing that perspective to the court and what an improvement that would be.
Inevitably, though, you are up against other people. So why are you a better candidate than your opponents? That's Justice Kelly and Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky.
Well, there's no question that I'm qualified for this position after being a law professor almost 30 years, a constitutional law expert, someone who was asked to advise Senator Herb Kohl on four United States Supreme Court nominations, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan. Someone who was spoke out in defense of the Merrick Garland nomination at the request of the Obama White House Office of Communications. So my opinion has been sought at the highest levels. And I'm also just someone who has a real concern for our working families in the justice system. And I've devoted a substantial part of my career trying to make the justice system work better from the nonprofit sector. And I think I can do more from a seat on the court.
Yeah, you highlighted your qualifications. We've also heard that from Justice Kelly, saying his appellate work as an attorney and his time on the court gives him the best experience. Judge Karofsky says she's most qualified as a judge handling trials. So how do you respond to those specific arguments about experience?
Well, what matters is the breadth of experience. You know, Justice Kelly has had a very narrow range of clients in his careers. He's tended to represent political parties, political candidates, politically connected individuals. Really, I believe that his appointment is more a reflection of his loyalty to partisan political parties than it is to his breadth of experience. On the other hand, I have experience, substantial experience, in both the criminal system, where I defended clients in the largest national FBI procurement fraud investigation in U.S. history, and in the civil system, where I defended clients in $350 million fraud lawsuits, and I have experience as a constitutional law professor, teaching, writing, studying our Constitution for 25 years. So I bring a breadth of experience, not some narrow set of clients or a narrow set of former experience.
We've heard you on the campaign trail draw a contrast with other candidates on how you view court precedent. What do you think the role of precedent is in these cases, the role of rulings of the past when it comes to deciding something that's in front of you today?
Well, this is a very important issue, and it's fundamental to our court system. We have prior rulings from courts, and I may disagree with the rationale, the reasoning that the courts use to arrive at those rulings. And in fact, over my 30-year career, I've published a lot of articles and blog posts explaining why I disagree with some prior cases, like Citizens United, which allowed First Amendment rights to apply to campaign finance laws, or the Heller decision, which applied to the right to own a handgun in your home for self-defense. So I've been clear where I've disagreed with prior cases. But where I really draw a distinction between myself and Justice Daniel Kelly, the incumbent, is he wants to reach out and overturn prior cases he disagrees with. And I think that that politicizes the court. It turns every election, it turns every judicial appointment process into a political battle to see who can get their preferred candidate on the court, because everything's on the table if you overturn precedent. Every political battle can be refought. And so I think it's important for our country, for our state, that judges respect precedent. What is decided is decided. It's very important which candidate you select, because going forward, there's still important issues that need to be decided. But I'm not looking to relitigate old battles.
Yeah, no, Justice Kelly says that precedent should be overturned when proven errors were made. And you say that precedent should be overturned when there's no longer justification that stands up to scrutiny. How are those different?
Well, he has often spoken about how he looks at the reasoning of a prior decision, and if he thinks that reasoning was incorrect and does not reflect the correct interpretation of either a statute or the Constitution, Justice Kelly says he feels an obligation to overturn that prior case. And that's really Dan Kelly imposing his interpretation, Dan Kelly's Constitution, on us. What I do is I say judges should have humility. I talk a lot about judicial restraint on the campaign trail. And that's the traditional view, that judges should actually hesitate to reach constitutional issues unless absolutely necessary. That there may be other grounds to decide a case, statutory grounds, factual issues. And if it's not necessary to reach a constitutional question, don't reach out and decide it. And I think that that's a very big difference between myself and Justice Kelly. He's demonstrated that he's looking for opportunities to rewrite the Constitution in his own image.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race with Professor Ed Filone. He's campaigning for a 10-year term on the court. The top two finishers in the field of three in February 18th's primary advance to an April runoff. What questions do you have for Professor Filone? What do you want to know about his qualifications or his positions as he seeks the seat on the Supreme Court? Call 800-642-1234. There's some context that all candidates bring to this, Professor Filone. You and Judge Karofsky signed the 2011 petition to recall Governor Walker over Act 10. Before his appointment, Justice Kelly published articles on things like same-sex marriage and affirmative action. We wonder, how much should voters consider those past actions, which are political in nature, when weighing the candidates in this election?
Well, I have never talked in terms of which political party wins or loses I don't look at outcomes. I talk about principles, and so I defend principles. I defend free speech for all. When I defended the Solidarity Singers in the state capitol of Madison, it wasn't because of what they were saying. It was because I defended the principle of free speech. And similar with the recall, I defend the sovereign power of the people under the Wisconsin Constitution to at any time decide they want to recall an elected official. That's why that provision is in our state constitution. So I have a demonstrated track record over 30 years of speaking out based on principles. That's what I'll continue to do. You can look at my webpage, FalloneForJustice.com. I've put all my writings on the webpage so the public can see. It's transparent. And if someone says that my speaking out and in favor of equal protection under the law or the separation of church and state is a political position, I simply say, just look at the Constitution. It's right there.
I take you at your word that you are signed that petition on principle and not necessarily because of any sort of partisanship. And yet the act, the standing up for those principles, can be seen as partisan, especially if it aligns repeatedly against Republican leaders. So how do you address the concept of partisanship when, in theory, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court is not supposed to be partisan?
Well, I'm the only candidate in this race who has avoided politicizing this race. Again and again, I've resisted any attempt to cast this election for our state Supreme Court in terms of Republican versus Democrat. You have the incumbent Daniel Kelly, who has physically located his campaign headquarters within the Republican Party headquarters. Now, that's a pretty clear statement of which side he's on. My other opponent consistently talks about us versus them on the campaign trail and in public forums, where she identifies the them as including Republicans. And I have criticized both of them for doing that. I'm running to be a Supreme Court justice for all the people of Wisconsin. If you look at what I've stood up for in my career, immigrant rights, free speech, the LGBTQ community and their rights, then I think you'll see that you could probably guess my political leanings. But I'm not running as a political candidate. I'm running to defend the principles in our Constitution.
And yet, why do you consider yourself as the more independent candidate when we can see you have supporters, Democrats, including, high-profile Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett?
Well, there are many public officials in southeastern Wisconsin who have endorsed me, and I'm very proud of that. They've endorsed me because they know me, because they've seen me as a leader in the nonprofit community in southeastern Wisconsin, leading the Latino Community Center, which intervened with at-risk youth to keep them out of gang activity in one of Milwaukee's toughest neighborhoods. They've seen me leading Centro Legal and providing affordable lawyers to working families throughout the southeastern portion of our state when they have legal issues related to divorce or landlord-tenant issues. They've seen me helping to provide low-cost lawyers in our immigrant communities. So I'm getting support and endorsement from a wide range of elected officials, but these are people who know me personally. They've worked with me solving local problems, and they know that on the state Supreme Court, I'll keep trying to make the justice system work better for everyone.
Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Ed Falloone stays with us here on the State Capitol Report. He's making the case to get your vote in next week's nonpartisan primary so he can move on to the general election ballot in April for state Supreme Court. And we wonder, what do you want to ask this Supreme Court hopeful? What do you need to know before casting your vote on Tuesday? What issues do you consider when trying to determine who to vote for in a state Supreme Court election? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. We have all three of the candidates on this week to connect with you and to answer your questions. 800-642-1234. Our conversation with candidate Ed Falloone continues in just a few moments. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening here on the Ideas Network. Seven justices make up Wisconsin State Supreme Court, and our guest today wants to be one of them. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and Ed Filone is talking with us as a candidate in the Supreme Court primary. He's one of three people vying for two spots on the general Supreme Court election ballot. What questions do you have for Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Ed Filone? What do you want to know about his positions or qualifications? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings or email ideas@WPR.org. And Howard from Portage is ready to join our conversation about the state Supreme Court race. Hi, Howard.
Hi, thank you. Ed, I'm wondering, in your opinion, if partisan gerrymandering is potentially illegal or completely legal. I'm not real happy with it. And if the United States Supreme Court, by refusing to consider these laws or procedures, are shirking their responsibility, or perhaps they have no authority there.
All right. Thanks for the question, Howard. Ed Filone, what do you think, partisan gerrymandering as it relates to your candidacy for the state Supreme Court?
Well, it's an important issue, and it's one that the United States Supreme Court has, in my opinion, shirked their responsibility on. They have said that the federal courts cannot decide the constitutionality of gerrymandered legislative districts, but that state Supreme Courts can. And so, in fact, we've seen various state Supreme Courts across the country, like in North Carolina, interpreting their own state constitution to strike down maps. And that issue is going to come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So I don't want to prejudge any case, but I can tell you this. The Wisconsin Constitution defines the right to vote. It defines who are the electors in our state who can exercise that right. And it has an equal protection provision that guarantees that our right to vote must be equal to everyone else's right to vote in the state. And so these are going to be some of the issues that I would be deciding on the state Supreme Court. Look, our Constitution is a machine for self-government. It guarantees our ability to participate in the making of the laws that we live under. And when you have partisan gerrymandered districts or extreme voter ID laws that take away our vote and our ability to participate, then the very fundamental purpose of our Constitution is frustrated.
Yeah, there are some nuances, though, when it comes to participation. I mean, on the campaign trail, you've pushed for the Supreme Court to adopt clear rules saying when justices should remove themselves from cases. Heard you mention it a little bit in your answer. So if you're elected, when would you recuse yourself from these cases?
Well, this is easy for me to answer because I've spent 7 years talking about this issue. Back in 2013, I was a candidate for the court, and one of my primary campaign platforms was the need to have change to the current rule that allows our state Supreme Court justices and other judges to sit and hear and decide cases where a major campaign contributor is either the lawyer or the party in front of them. That is just toxic to our system. If someone loses a case in a courtroom in Wisconsin, they shouldn't leave the courthouse wondering whether they lost on the merits or whether they lost because the opposing party had made a contribution to the judge. There was a petition filed by over 50 retired judges in our state that set reasonable contribution amounts that would require judges to step down from a case, $10,000 in the case of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And in the last 7 years, I've done public speaking and public education efforts and worked with groups like Common Cause in Wisconsin to advocate for the adoption of that rule. The current majority of our court refuses to do so. The incumbent Dan Kelly defends the current rule, and I would continue my fight to get the rule changed, and I think more effectively from a seat on the court.
If someone donates $20,000 to your campaign, then the maximum allowed amount from an individual contributor, would you recuse yourself from cases involving them?
Well, yes. I think if someone donates a major amount to my campaign and they're a party in my case, or they're a lawyer representing a party in my case, I would absolutely recuse myself because it doesn't matter whether I believe I could be fair and impartial in that case. What matters is the perception that the public has that our justices are for sale. And we need to fight that perception. We need to get back to where the public honestly believes we have an independent court. And that's what I'm fighting for.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court with Professor Ed Filone. He's campaigning for a 10-year term on the court. Top two finishers next week advance to an April runoff. We're wondering what questions you have, what you want to know about his qualifications or positions. You can call 800-642-1234. And Kelly from Cascade has a question for us this morning. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate hearing the things you've said so far. I'm curious where you stand on environmental regulations. I feel, the land can't fight for itself, the water can't fight for itself, nor can the air. And yet all of these things are at the mercy of a lot of decisions made on its behalf. And I'm just curious what your stance is.
All right. Thanks so much, Kelly. And Professor Filone.
Well, this is an important question, and I think it underscores the importance of having justices with a broad range of legal experience on the court. There are two issues here. One is an issue of local control and whether or not our local communities, whether it's counties or towns or villages, have the power and the authority to pass regulations that protect drinking water, that protect the environment from local polluters. And right now we have a majority of the court that has been dismissive of local control and has instead lodged a lot of control in the state legislature in Madison on these issues, and they're not as responsive to local residents. And then the other issue is it's a bit dry, but it's a question of administrative law and the authority of our agencies, like the Department of Natural Resources, which is an agency in the executive branch. And Dan Kelly, the incumbent, has led the charge in sort of a revolution to try and diminish the authority of these agencies like the DNR. So they have less authority, less power to pass rules that can protect our environment. So these are issues that perhaps fly under the radar, but definitely I see what's going on. And I'm committed to defending local control as a matter of our state constitution. We have a home rule provision and defending our administrative agencies. I don't think we need to overturn precedent and take away their authority to issue rules that protect us.
Professor Filone, on the Supreme Court, you'd be sitting at the top of the state's justice system. From your view as a law professor, what are patterns of mistakes in Wisconsin's justice system that give you concern that you think you could change?
Well, I mentioned the issue of local control, and I think that that's something that is a theme that I've seen over the years by a majority of our court. And I firmly believe that it's government's more responsive to the people at the local level, and it's a mistake to uphold rulemaking at the statewide level for everyone when many local communities have specific issues they're trying to deal with. The other issue that I see consistently is also troubling in a majority of our current justices, and that is an unwillingness to hold our state legislature to the rules of the Constitution. So, for example, in the recent lame duck ruling where the Supreme Court majority said they couldn't tell our state legislature to follow the rules contained in our state constitution in regards to when they were in extraordinary session, that it wasn't their job to tell the state legislature how to follow the Constitution. That is just contrary to the foundation of our legal system, the principle of judicial review. Going all the way back to Marbury versus Madison, it's the court's job to say what the law is and to hold our other two branches to the Constitution. And I feel that they have not been living up to that job in recent years.
Are you saying that based on what you saw that was in front of the state Supreme Court, that you would have ruled differently as far as where the legislature needed to stop when it came to the lame duck session?
Well, what I'm definitely saying is that the expression of the idea that it's not the job of our state Supreme Court to hold the state legislature to following the rules of the Constitution, that the state legislature can decide for itself. That statement of principle is one that I absolutely oppose and disagree with.
Ed Filone, what's our justice system doing well right now that you want to continue if you were to get a spot on the state Supreme Court?
Well, I think that there have been some encouraging steps in the direction of criminal justice reform. And on the campaign trail, I talk about three things. I talk about our pilot programs that we have across the state and various counties with specialty diversion courts that keep people who may have an underlying mental illness or addiction problem from getting into the criminal justice system and divert their cases to treatment. I think that that is a positive. I would love to see our state Supreme Court be a leader in expanding those efforts statewide.
All
so
right.
that they are the rule and not the exception, so that we don't have some states, for example, that have veterans courts to help veterans. Some counties. We don't have some counties that have veterans courts, and we don't have other counties that lack them.
Thank you so much. Ed Filone is a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court and up against Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly and Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network.